Thank you. Yes, my name is Ruth, and today I will be talking about end-season nutrient resorption and foliar nutrient leaching in senescing switchgrass in Iowa. Forgot to put that there. I'd like to thank the Sun Grant Initiative, the USDA, and the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State University for funding my research. Okay, so before I launch into the objectives for this particular research project, I'd like to highlight some of the reasons why perennial grasses are ideal to use as bioenergy feedstock. All right, so they can be high yielding. They provide multiple ecosystem services, and my perennial favorite, they recycle nutrients from the above ground biomass to the below ground biomass prior to dormant periods, and they do this every year. And that's exciting, right? At least it is to me. But, you know, we're still trying to perfect harvest management and fertilization management practices for them, because depending on how they're managed, their quality can differ, right? So a practice of interest right now is delayed harvest, okay? And so with delayed harvest, a producer waits until late winter or early spring before they harvest the biomass, and this has been shown to improve the feedstock quality through lower residual mineral nutrients in the feedstock, okay? And so we're wondering, right, what processes are driving that improvement? So that brings me to my objectives, which were we wanted to improve our understanding of nutrient cycling in perennial grasses, and more specifically, we wanted to improve our understanding of how perennial grasses are losing biomass nutrients during and after senescence. So, and we used switchgrass because it's a twofer, right? It's not only a model bioenergy species, it's also considered a model crop for studying perennial grasses. All right, so as a part of my work at Iowa State University, I developed this very lovely conceptual diagram of nutrient movement processes throughout the life of a perennial grass, okay? But for the sake of this discussion, we're going to look at two processes and one season. All right, so the first nutrient movement process I wanted to investigate was end-season resorption. So end-season resorption is also known as downward translocation. It's the active removal of nutrients from the above-ground biomass and then shuttling them, presumably, to below-ground or overwintering tissues, okay? In the literature, estimates of this process are usually provided as leaf-level resorption efficiency for perennial grasses, and the most common one that is agreed upon is 60% for nitrogen. And so what that means is, prior to senescence, 60% of the nitrogen in the leaves is actively removed from the leaves and then shuttled, presumably, to below-ground tissues. But the rest of the nutrients, there really isn't an agreed-upon figure yet for perennial grasses, so I wanted to investigate those. And the other process I wanted to look at was biomass leaching. Okay, so that is the passive loss of water-soluble nutrients from the above-ground tissues after extended wetness. So I'm showing raindrops right here, but that can be a misty day or snowmelt. All right, and now, even though in the literature there really aren't estimates provided for leaching from perennial grasses, it's often cited as one of the processes that is causing the beneficiality of delayed harvest, because the longer the biomass is left in the field, the lower the residual mineral nutrient content. Okay, but since there aren't estimates for this process in perennial grasses, I wanted to explore those. Okay, so first we're going to talk about how I estimated resorption efficiency. So this is a field of switchgrass. It was my experimental site. And I had 10 plots. I established 10 plots in that field over 2014 and 2015. Five of those plots received an experimental treatment, and five didn't. Since we're talking about resorption efficiency, we're not going to talk about those experimental plots just yet. So I have these plots. They're called base, and that's for a reason. I wanted to establish a baseline of leaf-level mineral nutrient changes over the senescent season, so over September and October. All right, so I returned these plots twice monthly for 2 months in October and September of 2014 and 15. I took leaf samples from the above or from the upper canopy and the lower canopy leaves of each of these plots, and then I sent them into a lab for tissue mineral nutrient analysis, and I got the results back as nutrient concentrations. All right, so this was purely observational in nature, right? So I used a general linear model in SAS and a t-test to determine the difference between the final and the initial sampling date concentrations of the leaves from these plots. And then with those concentrations, I calculated nutrient resorption efficiency, which is that fancy equation you see there. Resorption efficiency is just a percentage estimate of the degree to which a nutrient is actively removed from the leaves. Now, as a side note, you see that 0.713 figure in that equation. That is the mass loss correction factor. It was recently developed for graminoids. The idea is that it will help us correct for the mass and area losses that we tend to see in switchgrass leaves as they senesce. All right, so what did I see? So for nitrogen, potassium, and calcium, we'll start there. So that first column that I circled, those are the average magnitude of difference, concentration-wise, in the upper and lower canopies, averaged over years. So nitrogen in the upper canopy decreased an average of 6.37 grams per kilogram between September and the end of October. All right, and that's not a surprise. Nitrogen is a phloem mobile nutrient. So if a nutrient is going to be actively resorbed from a tissue, phloem mobility is going to play a role in that. And potassium, same story. Potassium, phloem mobile, and it decreased. All right, so I know you all want to talk about calcium, but first, let's look at the nutrient resorption efficiency. So that's using that equation I showed you previously. Nitrogen, that 6.37 grams per kilogram decrease translates to about a 58% resorption efficiency estimate from the leaves, okay? So calcium, the elephant in the room, why is it behaving differently? Why, in that first column, you see calcium concentrations are increasing over time? What's going on? The leaves are senescing. They're not importing things back into them, okay? Well, unlike potassium and nitrogen, calcium is non-phloem mobile. So once it's incorporated between cell walls, it stays put. And so in this instance, what we're seeing is sort of a reverse dilution effect. Other things are being exported from the leaves, and calcium is staying. So its content is likely staying the same, but the concentration appears to increase, and that, of course, is reflected in the much lower nutrient resorption efficiency estimates for it. All right, so how about phosphorus, sulfur, and magnesium? So phosphorus, also phloem mobile, showed similar resorption efficiency estimates to nitrogen. Sulfur is considered slightly less phloem mobile, depending on, you know, who you talk to. So, and its resorption efficiency estimates are also a little lower. The interesting nutrient here is magnesium. So magnesium's concentrations did not change at all significantly for either the upper or lower canopy in either year, and you can see that from the lack of significant p-values. So why then does it have resorption efficiency estimates in the 30%? So unlike with calcium, whose concentrations sort of artificially appeared to increase, magnesium concentrations aren't changing at all. And that suggests to me that magnesium might have been resorbing, but to a lesser extent. And so maybe the changes were being masked by the loss of other constituents as well. So perhaps that mass loss correction factor that I used enabled me to accurately represent the lower levels of magnesium resorption that we see here. All right, so I can add some values now to that autumn conceptual diagram. We got some numbers, some estimates for resorption efficiency, but what about foliar level leaching? All right, so in order to study foliar level leaching, I needed leaves that were exposed to an experimental treatment, right? So this is where those other five plots come into play. All right, so that machine you see in the background was a portable outdoor rainfall simulator. It was a lot of fun to move around the field. And it applied simulated rainfall at a rate of about 120 millimeters per hour. That's a lot of rain. I applied simulated rainfall to my rainfall plots 5 times over September and October of 2014 and 2015, the same dates that I collected leaves from those baseline plots, all right? And then I compared the leaf nutrient concentrations from the rainfall plots to the baseline plot concentrations. And I was looking for two types of effects here. I was looking for short-term effects, and I was looking for cumulative effects. So I compared the leaves taken from the rainfall plots after an hour of rainfall to the baseline plots for short-term effects. That is, on a given day, after an hour of rainfall, was there a difference between leaves that got rained on and leaves that didn't? All right. Now, for the cumulative effects, I compared the before concentrations from those rainfall plots to the baseline plots. And the idea here is, okay, maybe I won't see a short-term effect of simulated rainfall, but potentially after multiple simulated rainfalls, maybe those leaves that got rained on lots of times with lots of water might be different from the baseline plot leaves. And so for this, I used a repeated measures model in SAS because I was returning to the same plots over time to collect samples and apply treatment. So what did I find? I know there's a lot here, and I don't expect you to read it all. I'm going to highlight the take-homes. All right, so for phosphorus, potassium, and magnesium, I saw some significant sporadic short-term effects, mostly in the lower canopy. That's the bottom half of that table there. All of these values are positive, meaning that the baseline plots had higher concentrations than the rainfall plots. So that would indicate some leaching going on. All three of these nutrients, now this is different from phloem mobility, all three of these nutrients are transported throughout the plant to varying degrees in water-soluble forms. So it would make sense that as the leaves senesce, those water-soluble forms of those nutrients would be vulnerable to dissolution and dissolving and leaching out. But what about calcium, nitrogen, and sulfur? All right, so calcium and sulfur showed some significant effects, again, in the lower canopy mostly. And here, those effects are negative, meaning that the rainfall plots had higher concentrations of these nutrients. And that's interesting. Why would that be? This is supposed to, you know, this is the end of the season. This is their senescing. So calcium and sulfur, I already told you a little bit about calcium, incorporated between cell walls. But that's, we're talking about phloem mobility. Here we're talking about water solubility, and it's the same thing, right? Calcium's incorporated between cell walls. It's likely not vulnerable to water solubility. And sulfur is also incorporated within cell membranes. It's also incorporated into large weight molecular compounds. Likely not vulnerable to water solubility, okay? But what about nitrogen? I didn't see anything for nitrogen. So that's a wild card. But my educated guess is nitrogen is highly internally conserved, right? So whatever forms of nitrogen are left over at the end of the season, I'm thinking cell wall proteins, extensins, that kind of thing. Again, probably not likely vulnerable to leaching. All right, so we have some short-term effects here, and I saw them mostly towards the end of the season when the leaves were over 50% senesced. So senesced leaves aren't going to translate nutrients into themselves, right? Translocate nutrients into themselves. So I should see some cumulative effects of all these rainfalls, right? I did not. I saw exactly four, and they were very low in magnitude. So that surprised me because I dumped roughly a growing season's worth of rain onto those rainfall plots over 2 months, and I didn't see much cumulative effects. So I'm thinking that what happened was natural rainfall caused the control plots to catch up, you know, with the rainfall plots by the end of the season, and my rainfall didn't make a difference. So I can add another bit of information to that conceptual diagram. It doesn't seem that in this instance, additional simulated rainfall didn't really cause practically significant levels of foliar leaching during senescence, and by practically, I just mean this probably isn't going to alter anyone's harvest management decisions. But this did leave me with some more questions, okay? So, as any good research should. So, does this narrative change over winter after several freeze-thaw events? And does this narrative change depending on the morphological part that you're looking at? So those are the questions that sort of fueled my future research that I've done with Iowa State, and of course I can't talk about it now, but if you have any questions, I am open to them. Thank you. Yes?
I thought you said you used 56 kilograms of nitrogen.
Yeah, that field was established in 2009, and yearly it received 56 kilograms of nitrogen. So, and I think, I'm pretty sure that was in the fall.
That's fine. Just wondered what you might expect if you added more.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a very good question. That's probably what other future intrepid graduate students in my lab will be looking at, is because that was something that was put on the table towards the end of my research. If I could just go back in time. Other questions? Yes?
Maybe I missed it, but did you start the rainfall simulation after killing frost?
No, I started right, I should have mentioned that. Actually, it's a good question. I began right at enthesis, shortly, a month after enthesis, beginning of September. So enthesis was August 1st, more or less, for my plots, and I wanted to get them when they were just going into senescence. So peak biomass growth, entering into senescence. That's what I wanted to capture, and then we went until the end of October. And because the nature gods don't like me, I did not get killing frosts until like 2 or 3 days after both of my seasons ended. So, anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.